My job is to somehow make them curious enough or persuade them by hook or crook to get more aware of themselves and where they came from and what they are into and what is already there, and just to bring it out. This is what compels me to compel them, and I will do it by whatever means necessary.
Welcome to the Black Girls Heal podcast, where we talk about healing our intimacy disorders, unresolved trauma, and building a healthy relationship with first ourselves and then others. Every episode, we will talk about advice you can apply today to break unhealthy patterns and grow in your self-worth. I'm Sheena Lachey, love addiction coach and trauma specialist. Let's begin. Hello, hello, and welcome to the latest episode of Black Girls Heal. I am so excited to be with you this week. This is a special week for a few reasons. The first reason is because this is my first video podcast episode. I've been recording the Black Girls Heal podcast since 2016, 2017, something like that. I never know the years. Y'all know that if you've listened to this podcast. It's been a minute, but I have not had any video episodes. It's always been easier for me to just be bundled up in my pajamas, talking to the microphone whenever, however. But I know that video is one of my favorite ways that I get to connect to other people, other creators, other teachers, and connect with them. I also know that whenever I'm able to teach live and able to connect with y'all as well, that also feels so much more intimate. So I actually tasked myself this year to do more video content. It's been my New Year's resolution. Yes, we are in September. It was my New Year's resolution to put out more video content. And so you've actually seen it. If you follow me on social media, you see a little bit of it on TikTok and Instagram. Of course, you know, not everyday posts, but a lot more than what I used to do before. And then also getting into more YouTube videos and then also putting the podcast on video. And so we are here. We are getting started, and I'm so excited to be a part of this transition. So if you would like to watch me on video, you can continue listening to this podcast episode on YouTube. And if you're an audio girly and you're listening to this while you're doing your walk or driving or multitasking or anything, we're always going to be here on audio as well. But for today's episode, I plan for it to be a check-in episode because I haven't, you know, come and just talked about things that I'm learning and growing with. But I had video issues, I had camera issues last week, which is why there was not this podcast episode last week. So I just decided to wait till this one. And in the meantime of that, I lost the list. So I'm going to assume that that was divine timing. And so I'm still going to do a mini check-in, but the majority of today's episode is going to be about the importance of pacing when it comes to dating for love addicts. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that after the jump. But basically, many of us who can get into partnerships with people can sometimes rush and not pay attention to red flags. And so I'm going to talk about why that happens, what we may be looking for, and kind of how to slow that down. And then I'm going to be talking about, like I said, my own transitions and check-ins and things like that, because it's been a minute since I've talked about those things. So, and then I know that I mentioned doing a Q&A for some folks who may have submitted questions before. So that may be a part two, but if I can continue it or keep it in this episode, I will. But for sure, we're going to take a deep dive into how to pace our relationships. And so if you're ready for that, let's go ahead and jump on in. Thanks for listening to this week's podcast. Before we get started, let's take a small break to say thank you to this week's sponsors.
With summer winding down and fall almost being here, it's time to think about getting our cozy self-care rituals on point. The Everything Shower is a core staple with Osea's new Undaria Algae Body Wash and is a must-have addition to your routine. The Undaria Algae Body Wash infuses your shower with the healing power of the sea with this all-natural, uplifting, citrusy scent. This pH balanced and hydrating formula doesn't strip the skin, leaving it feeling soft and renewed. I love how this body wash has such a smooth, gel-like texture. It lathers so easily and leaves me feeling fresh and yummy. And its natural plant-based ingredients help support the skin's moisture barrier and cleanse without stripping, which is perfect for this time of year. With Osea being clean, vegan, cruelty-free, and climate-neutral certified, you never have to choose between your values and your best skin. Create your shower with clean, vegan face and body care from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with the code BGH at OseaMalibu.com. You'll get free samples with every order and free shipping on orders over $60. Head to OseaMalibu.com and use code BGH for 10% off.
Okay, so I just needed to pause really quickly to pull up the questions in case I'm able to get to the questions that were submitted. But let's just do just a little mini check-in. So I have been, like I know many people have been going through so many transitions within the last few months. I know because I've talked with many of you. I know because I've seen it in my own personal life, in the life of my friends, in the life of my students, that a lot of us, to put it bluntly, have gone through hell the last 2 or 3 months. We have gone through our own personal hells in our own little corners of the world where so many things in our lives were shaken up, whether or not it was relationships, whether or not it was career and finances, whether or not it was our health, whether or not it was friendships that we thought would always be there, whether or not it was our own sense of self. All of us came to a place where we were hit with a wall. On the other side of that wall, we had to find ourselves. There are a lot of doors I noticed that were closed that maybe we may have had an inkling that it would have happened, but there was no room for there to be any negotiation. It's almost like the universe, God was like, okay, I'm done playing, or, you know, I have something better for you. And so this is what's happening, and you're going to come along with me. And we had to grieve a lot of it. One of the things, and the reason why I want to start off with this part of the check-in, is because one of the things that I've noticed, not only with myself, but also with a lot of my students and a lot of my clients, is the way that this transition has happened. It's almost like in the past, whenever we've had closed doors, and I guess y'all can let me know in the DMs or in the comments or, you know, reply wherever it is that you're listening to this. A lot of us, whenever we have had some type of transition or door that's closed, we've known, okay, well, this is over, but we have a kind of an idea about what's next, right? So this relationship is over, but I kind of know what I want to do next. This job path is over, but I kind of know what's next. It feels like so many of us have kind of run through all the things that we knew how to do. And now we've been open. What's in front of us is this new life where there is no blueprint. There is no blueprint. There is no path. There is no guide telling us, okay, this is your next step. This is what is supposed to be for you. And so it's interesting. I guess I do kind of wish I was teaching this live. There's almost this wish that there was someone else on the other side. Actually, maybe not a wish that there was someone else on the other side, but that there's a sense that we're safe. There's a sense that, okay, whatever is happening, it's been hard. It's been emotional. There's been a lot of grief. There's been a lot of sadness, but I know I'm going to be okay. I just don't know what's next. I don't know which direction I'm supposed to go in. And so that sense of uncertainty is what makes this even more unstable, right? What does this life look like when I'm not in this type of relationship anymore? What does life look like if I'm completely changing my career path? What does life look like if I'm leaving behind this friend group or these groups of people that I thought was going to be my support? What does this look like when I'm changing my identity? And it is very destabilizing, but I want to say this here on the podcast because I want you to know that if this is you, if this has been you, you are exactly where you're supposed to be. I think we're all getting a gift right now. I think big, wide open space of the undefined and the unknown is an incredible gift because I feel like we've been given this giant easel. We have a giant blank easel and canvas that's completely clean and pure and white for us to create our biggest dreams and wishes and desires and to make a reality. And in front of us, we have a giant, is it called a palette? We have a giant palette of different pastels and, you know, we can choose oils or we can choose chalk or we can use colored pencils. We can do whatever it is that we want to make what it is that we want reality. But this isn't a paint by numbers. We don't have stencils. We are not at Painting with a Twist or whatever it is called in your city where you have an artist who from the front of the room, there's a picture that you're supposed to mimic and draw, and you just follow along and you get the beautiful art piece that they give you. You might be able to remix it and put a couple colors here, or change a couple colors out there, but basically you're recreating what has already been done. All of us are creating our new lives. This next chapter is something big and abundant. And the problem with this is that we have the opportunity to probably finally, for the first time, dream past our own imagination. The types of relationships we left behind, maybe they weren't quite what we wanted, or maybe they were good enough, or maybe they were okay. Now we have an open opportunity in front of us, and we are being asked to dream bigger. We are being asked to want more, to desire more, to be open for more, to receive more. And that's like, okay, what's the limit? And I feel like the divine message for most of us, if not all of us, is that there is no limit. And whatever path you want to grow on, just pick up that paintbrush, pick up that piece of chalk, pick up that pencil, whatever it is, and draw your biggest dream. Take up the whole space of the canvas. If your canvas in your mind right now is, because the one in my mind, at first, I thought it was like a 24 by 36, but as I'm looking at it in my mind's eye, y'all, my canvas in front of me is the size of a freaking, the side of a building. My canvas is huge. There's almost no limit to it, but it feels like it's bigger than what I can paint on my own, but it's my own and it's very exciting. And so I hope that this message reaches those of us who need this at the right time. After we have gone through the sadness and the crying and the frustration and everything, you know, while I was going through this, I feel like I'm pretty intuitively connected to my audience. I've noticed a lot that what I'm going through either mirrors what y'all are going through, or what I've just gone through is the lesson that's going to help teach, if not y'all, then the students in my program or the people around me. I feel like I'm pretty intuitively, spiritually, divinely connected to the people around me. And so when I was going through this and, you know, I'm reusing old podcast episodes and I'm, you know, I haven't been on video live in any form for almost 2 months. I took a sabbatical even from the recovery school and the group coaching calls just because I couldn't. I could not show up as my best self at all. Just what was being taken away or learned about, or it was just fatigue. I was so fatigued, emotionally fatigued and drained and everything else. So I remember being like, man, I wish I kind of wanted to come on and do a live about it or do a podcast about it just to let y'all know, to let y'all know that this is kind of happening in the zeitgeist. But like I said, the timing of this happened when it needed to. If I was able to record this in last week's episode, I don't think I would have had the same message that I just gave y'all right now, of abundance, of clarity, of hope, that you have access to your biggest dreams in front of you right now, that there is no limit, y'all. There's no limit for any single thing that you want. If you're like, damn, I feel like she's talking about this, but I'm not sure. No, it's that. Whatever that thing is for you, that is what I'm talking about. And so yeah, it happened when it was supposed to happen, how it was supposed to happen. So I want you all to stay encouraged. And I want you to know that there is no wrong next step. If that is part of what's also destabilizing for you right now, because you're creating something that's brand new and you're worried that whatever step you're taking is in the wrong direction, it is impossible for whatever step you're taking to be wrong. I just feel like that's something that y'all need to hear. It is impossible for what the next step you're taking to be wrong, because all you're supposed to be doing is taking that step and following and being and listening and that being connected to your intuition, to your spirit, and going in faith. Okay. That is for whoever needed it. Let me just check and connect and see if there's anything else around that I wanted to share, anything else around my check-ins before we talk about pacing and dating and making sure that we are not going too fast. Yeah, on my original list, I wanted to say some things about ADHD, but I don't have that list in front of me. Talk about a neurodivergence. Work. So maybe that's an update. Things have not changed. But yeah, okay. So let's talk about the importance of pacing and dating. So something that I have learned, so I teach a lot of different things for us as love addicts in our recovery process. And not only about healing the trauma that gets us into the pattern of love addiction, which is overinvesting, becoming emotionally available or emotionally dependent on people very soon in relationships, going off the fantasy of who you think a person or relationship could be instead of the reality that is within the relationship, connecting to a person either through trauma bonding or through a sense of obligation, a sense of codependence, and just really needing someone to feel stable and feel whole. Mistaking that intensity, mistaking that obsession for love. And it's kind of tricky because two things could be true at the same time. It is very possible that the person that you're in a love addictive relationship with is someone that you genuinely love as a person and think they have a great heart and think that they're a good person and you have love for them, or maybe you are in love with them. And it is also very possible that you have very deep, intense feelings for someone who is emotionally, physically, spiritually dangerous for you. And someone who is constantly repeating your trauma of being abandoned, rejected, and wounded over and over, and your inability to distance yourself from this person is not just because you love them, but because this is a very familiar trauma pattern in your life. You have always had people who were emotionally neglectful, people who will give you just enough attention, time, love, connection for you to stay around. And it was just enough breadcrumbing to where you would think that if you change how you show up, or if you're loving enough, giving enough, if you threaten them enough, if you control them enough, if you seduce them enough, that this relationship could have a change. And so that's why you're still there, not because this person is the one, but this is the one that's going to repeat that type of trauma. And your nervous system, your body, your spirit is familiar with that. And also on the other side of that is not used to, and maybe is even afraid of healthy love that doesn't require you to always live in overdrive. Because here's the thing about being in healthy relationships. When you're in a healthy relationship with someone, especially if it's one of your first ones, it is one of the most destabilizing things ever. It is terrifying. It is terrifying to be stripped in front of someone and not even this, you know, close wise, but it is terrifying to be fully seen by someone, to be in a place where, because of a love addictive relationship, you spend a whole lot of time focused on what does this person want? What do they want? What do they need? What are they thinking? How can I keep the romance alive? How can we like make all like the honeymoon feelings stay alive? How do I make sure that they are still into me? There's a lot of focus on that person. And when that is not there, but focus, then what do I need to focus on, right? And because in a healthy relationship, your partner, instead of being more focused on what they need or being avoidant, they are focused, yeah, on their own stuff, but they're also focused on you. They want to get to know you. They want to get to know your hopes and your fears and everything. So your habit as a love addict to wear a mask, to become needless and wantless, to be able to hide behind being the perfect girlfriend, wife, sister, you know, daughter, whatever it is, because you can be in codependent relationships in multiple different places, the mask has to come off because they're not going to let you get too far along without answering questions about, no, how really are you? You know, what are you thinking? What are you feeling? Why do you ask questions like that? And really wanting to get deep. And so when the mask is stripped away, and they actually see you, this love that you thought you really wanted this whole time, to just be able to feel safe and to have someone love you for you and to not need you to give them anything and they really want to give to you, that is terrifying. Because anytime people have tried to do those things to you, whether you're conscious of it or not, most of y'all may have had the experience where there was some type of punishment that came afterwards. So for example, I have someone maybe as a child or maybe even as a young adult or whatever, as soon as I start to love them and feel safe and let them in, that's when they disappear. That's when they ghost me. That's when they get angry at me for no reason. That's when they lose their job. That's when there's some type of financial distress. That's when they, you know, cheat on me. That's when they get locked up. Like, happiness has always been synonymous with consequence, right? Or maybe this person, people from your past, maybe they were narcissistic, maybe they were abusers. So as soon as you start to let go and start to rest and everything, they will start to twist your knees on top of you. Now the love that they gave you so freely, you can't see air quotes if you're listening to this, but they gave you so freely is now collateral that they need to cash in on. You owe them, right? And you're kind of indebted to them. And so healthy love can be very destabilizing when you first get it. So the nature of all this and how this looks like in love addicted relationships is one of the things that I teach about. So I teach about the background of that, but then I also talk about, well, what do we do next? What does it look like when we date in a healthy way? I hit both the trauma in my programs and in my coaching, and then I also hit on what is the solution and what are the steps. And so one of the steps that I talk about is having a dating plan, which is basically my steps for folks to pace themselves in relationships. As a love addict, it is very easy that you meet someone and before you know it, y'all are wrapped into having 6-hour phone calls and seeing each other every other day and, you know, having marathon dates and sleeping together and meeting each other's families. And what's interesting about that, or what makes that really enticing, is not only does that hit all of our really sweet spots for trauma bonding with people, you know, like I finally met this person. Like, here's the fantasy. The fantasy is I meet the person who's the one, right? And the one is going to be so enraptured with me and love me so much. It's going to feel so right. And it's going to be mutual. They're going to want to be with me as much as I want to be with them. And we're going to get each other. And we're going to build this life. I'm going to feel safe and I'll feel whole. And it's just going to round out all the other great things that I have going on in my life, right? That is a very generic love addictive fantasy for the most part. And to be clear, I was talking with another client before, you know, I am a hopeless romantic. As much as I teach everyone to pace and be mindful and pay attention to red flags, y'all have heard me say, if you listen to this podcast at all, you deserve to be adored. You deserve to be desired. You deserve to be treated like a queen. Like that is, to me, that is standard, is what we give away and is what we ignore in hopes of getting that. When we meet someone who is not that right fit, but because we're so addicted to and so desperate for this emotional payoff, and we're so desperate for this sense of security and just to be able to exhale and relax and to have the relief to not have to do this anymore, so many of us will trade out our sense of safety and will self-abandon. It's not really conscious all the time. Sometimes it is, but that's what we need to stay mindful of. When it comes to pacing, I teach this dating plan to help us kind of stair step to not, oh, that's what I was going to say. We will see a whole lot of love stories online where when the person met the person that was them for them, and say they have been in a very long-term healthy relationship, they're someone who we consider a relationship model, they may say that, yeah, with all the other people, it wasn't the same as when I met this person. And so that reinforces our trauma pattern to find a person that is going to fix all the ways that people neglected us in the past, all the ways that we were traumatized in the past, all of the heartbreak of the past. And so what I'm trying to explain here, y'all, is that I don't think that these things have to be mutually exclusive. I don't think that you have to choose. I think that you can know in your heart, and I think that you can be a romantic. And I think you can also be very mindful that there are parts of you that the way your trauma plays out is that it will romanticize red flags and struggle, right? And so to make sure that I have a healthy, rich love story that does not end in trauma and in heartbreak and me being broken or worse than I was before, I need to be very honest about this other part. I can't be like, well, if I focus on this, then I'm being negative. So I'm just going to really just try to like feel my intuition here. No, the feelings part is this. The feeling parts, now that I'm on video, y'all. Y'all can't see where my hands are. But when you focus too much on your feelings are deeply, deeply neural networked towards making you rush towards commitment, rush towards intimacy with someone, which I'm going to talk about in a moment, the reasons why and some of the things that I've seen and noted about this. It is very, very much reflexive towards, I meet someone, I think they're cool, let me make them the one. You can't always trust your emotions, which is why having some very practical black and white tools is very important, which includes a dating plan, which includes, this is what happens for me on the first dates. This is what happens for me on the next set of dates. This is what I need to be in an exclusive relationship. This is how long I think it needs to take. This is what intimacy looks like for me, physical intimacy looks like. And this is how long it'll take for me to make these types of commitments and everything. I'm going to go ahead and share and be honest. When it comes to this, I do my own tools, right? I don't just talk about the things that I teach here. I actually try to live them out. And so recently, I was going through kind of my own dating inventory and working through what some of my relationships over the last couple of years have looked like. And I realized, y'all, that I hadn't been following my dating plan. I hadn't been casing myself in certain relationships like I would have wanted to. Now, you know, I've said little clips here and there that I have been so fortunate to have been able to date some really incredible men who treated me incredibly and truly loved me and adored me. And, you know, the relationships ended for their own reasons. But what I thought that the pacing for those relationships was unique, but actually I hadn't been pacing really in any of the relationships, even the ones that ended up not being long-term and serious relationships. So I wrote it down, and I think I'm going to probably add this as a tool for the folks in my program, like a way for you to do your own inventory, at least the things that I did to do my, this is not a verb, but I'm going to say it, to inventorize my past relationships to see black and white, what were my patterns. I think I'm going to add that to our recovery school, which, by the way, y'all, one of the transitions that I made over the last couple of months is I did fully, for real this time, convert the recovery school to a membership. So instead of it being a program that just has, you know, 6 months of cohort time together, the curriculum is broken down over a year. And so you're able to come, take what you need, get support, and stay as long as you need to be mentored in the area of love addiction and love avoidance. And so you can see the new curriculum and what is available for you each month and what you learn about each month. And I'm really excited about it. I feel like it's going to be so much more accessible for people. I think what has stopped a lot of people from doing the recovery school, from at least from things that I've heard, is waiting for the right time. As much as I say there is no right time, like if you're feeling called to work on these things and work on your self-esteem and your trauma and your love avoidance and your love addiction, now is the right time because you take all of those traumas and all the impact of that in every area of your life. It's not just your romantic partnerships that are connected to that. It is so connected to your sense of self-concept, how you see the world. And you change one area of your life, everything changes, right? But I know people have been like, okay, I'm going to wait till this is done, or like, this is a hard time. And, you know, I'm going to wait till I have more mental capacity. So I'm really excited about the accessibility for that, for people to be able to pause and come and go as they need and to extend as they need. But I think I'm going to add the men inventory or the dating partner inventory to that membership. But yeah, I thought that it was unique. I thought this was a unique thing. And so I had to come to myself and say, okay, Sheena, why have you, as someone who teaches this stuff, why have you been rushing into partnerships and dating all this time? When I was so surprised that it wasn't even on my radar. That's what I mean, y'all, about this stuff being so insidious. I not only teach this for a living, I coach women in this all the time. You tell me any story about your relationships and I will be able to clock the patterns and the trauma within minutes. Like this is something that I feel like I've been really gifted in. But when it came to me in this corner of my life, as self-aware as I can be and self-analytical or whatever, this area was completely hidden to me. I was completely blind to it, which is also a defense mechanism. Some of us are doing things that is very problematic and we have no idea that that is happening. And we're probably not even open to any feedback from people who may spot it, you know, because I know for sure if there was someone who would have commented on what was going on, and there was someone who did comment on one relationship, but they did in a very shitty way. But even if they would have done it in a very, you know, open way, I think I, based on what I'm about to share with y'all about what I found to be the reasons why I was rushing to relationships, is so connected to my own trauma that I was trying to heal via these relationships, I would not have been open. I would not have been open to anyone saying, challenging me in this area until I was ready for the feedback, you know? And so here's what I found.
Hey, we hope you're enjoying the podcast so far. Let's take a quick break to say thanks to this week's sponsors.
The weather is about to start cooling off, which means it is time to transition into our fall and winter wear. And looking for quality, stylish autumn clothing has been so easy since I found Quince. I love when feminine design meets comfort, meets classic lines. And finding stores that match those qualities is not always easy. You might be giving up the quality of a clothing style for the design choice, or you might find something that's made well, but the style is not flattering. Luckily, Quince offers timeless and high-quality items that I adore, ensuring my wardrobe stays fresh and I don't have to blow my budget. So like cashmere sweaters for $50, pants for every occasion, washable silk tops, and so much more. And the best part is all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices with premium fabrics and finishes. And I love that. I am personally so excited to add my taupe Italian leather crossbody purse to my wardrobe this fall. The classic and timeless design and incredible structure and beautiful hardware is making it a staple not only for my upcoming fall wardrobe, but also still for my summer dresses as well. And finding something of such great quality at an incredible price makes it even better. Make switching seasons a breeze with Quince's high-quality closet essentials. Go to quince.com/BGH for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/BGH to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/BGH. Ever feel like you're too busy to eat healthy? Well, meal kits from Sunbasket are the perfect solution. I've had the amazing experience of trying Sunbasket for myself, and let me tell you, it was amazing. So at my core, I'm a meat and potatoes girl. So the steaks with chimichurri and harissa roasted sweet potatoes were hitting the spot. And they have such an incredible variety of new and flavorful dishes like the salmon burgers with lemon dill mayo and the Saigon chicken and vermicelli bowls. Y'all, they are so good. With Sunbasket, you can feel confident that you're putting a healthy and delicious meal on the table that is ready in 30 minutes or less. Sunbasket proudly works with the best farms and suppliers to fill their meal kits with organic, fresh produce and responsibly sourced antibiotic-free meats and seafood. Sunbasket makes it easy and convenient to cook healthy meals that cater to your lifestyle and health needs. So with delicious meal plans like Mediterranean, carb conscious, vegetarian, keto friendly, gluten free, diabetes friendly, and more, it is so easy to swap ingredients as needed as well. Ready to eat in less than 5 minutes with zero prep and no mess, it is perfect for even the busiest of us. So try it for 4 weeks and see how clean eating can change the way you feel. Go to sunbasket.com/blackgirlsheal today to save $120 across your first 4 deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/blackgirlsheal to save $120 across your first 4 deliveries plus free shipping on your first order. This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. In a world where you do not know what you're getting, finding someone you can be authentic with and who leads in being their real self is so important. And when you're dating, it's even more important that you meet people who aren't into wearing a mask and are just as serious about meeting their person through genuineness and clarity. And that's why I love eHarmony's detailed compatibility quiz to help you see upfront if they are a great fit for your values, your lifestyle, and your commitment level versus having to wait months in to figure all of that out. eHarmony is all about helping you find someone you can be yourself with. We all want to be seen, heard, and understood. And that's why so many more people are turning to eHarmony. I'd love for you to give eHarmony a shot. Get started with their compatibility quiz for free so you can find someone you can be yourself with. eHarmony, get who gets you.
Here's what I found for me were 3 reasons that I was rushing into dating relationships. And as promised, this is going to be directly related to lessons for you, because these 3 lessons are exactly things that I've seen in so many of my clients who, when they meet people, they will still rush into partnerships, even though they have been able to break these other patterns. I was talking with one of my students about, You know, she's gone through the recovery school. She's decided to start dating again. She's healed so much. She's worked on her self-concept. And so now she's dating. And there are certain types of men that aren't even on her radar that she used to date before that she would not give a second glance to, right? And I'm so proud of her, right? But now there are men who seem to be on a different level, but some of these other things are still kind of happening. And she's kind of wondering, okay, am I being too strict? And do I need to be giving them the benefit of the doubt? You know, am I asking for too much, right? And she's not. But the reason why this is hard is if anyone is old enough to remember Super Mario Brothers on Nintendo, or even if you never played that game, just, you know, your knowledge of video games. But whenever you play Super Mario, there was like, what, 8 different worlds, right? So on the first level of the game, you go to the different souls and you do like the different little missions and stuff until you finally beat the big Kahuna, you know, Bowser, whoever was in the castle. And then it was great, right? The different missions got a little bit harder, but once you got to the big castle, done, easy, right? Then you went to level 2, and level 2 was not like level 1. You have the same skills that you have the same knowledge. You can go and do level 1 in your sleep. But level 2 is you're taking those skills and now there are different enemies, right? New level, new devil, right? Or actually, it's the same devil. It just looked differently. It's slightly harder. And so as we continue to do this healing process, y'all, and we continue to graduate, and we are never moving backwards, where we are taking exactly everything that we have learned and everything we've grown into, and we're just becoming more and more of the women that we've always either aspired to be or that we've always been, but just never had access to. We're starting to see how amazing we always have been and how wise we are, and that we have all the answers we need inside of us. But that doesn't eliminate the fact that we still have different levels that we have to move beyond, and we have to master the new types of enemies in this level that may have different abilities than the other ones didn't have. And so we may need to have different skill sets. We may need to continue to practice the basics. Don't stop doing the basics just because I'm in a new level. Don't try to get all fancy. Let's build on top of what we've already known to do. So bring this back to pacing in relationships and dating and stuff. I've noticed that once the women that I've served have been able to get past this first level, sometimes it's easier to kind of let your guard down with these newer people because they don't look like the riffraff that you used to date before. So you kind of assume that because they look differently, they talk differently, they may go to therapy, have a better relationship with their mom. They may be someone who's in community. They may be more financially stable. You want to give them a little bit more grace than you did the junk or the people who were acting junky towards you in the past, and you don't. You don't do that. You have to keep your same standards. You have to keep your same belief. You have to keep steady and faithful in this next level. Otherwise, yeah, you will start to crash and burn like you did before. You will start to get very confused, you know? So let's talk about the 3 reasons why this happens. And these are also things that I can relate to. Of course, there's probably going to be more, but these are very 3 common reasons. One common reason why I have noticed that women will rush into dating relationships, even as they've gone through the recovery process, once they meet someone who they feel like could be potentially someone who's good for them, is unresolved father wounds. So I kind of already talked about this. I think I talked about this on a previous episode. And I think I also talked about this for sure sometime like on social media. But this is where the thought of the father wound intensive came up. And I'll talk a little bit about that at the end of today's podcast episode, if that was something that you were interested in. So this might be a recap or a throwback to what I mentioned before when it came to father wounds. But one of the things that I've mentioned when I've taught about this is how I feel like when it comes to a lot of the work here at BGH, when I've talked about trauma, I've talked about a lot of healing around that is related to father wounds, but probably falls under the category of mother wound impacts or mother hunger. So how it impacts your sense of self-worth, whether or not you like yourself, enjoy yourself, and that kind of thing. But one of the things that's pretty unique when it comes to father wounds and what happens when you have an absent, an abusive, a negligent, selfish, narcissistic father is the absence of protection. One of the most common refrains and common or kind of soul cries that I hear from the women that I serve when we get really, really deep, right? When we kind of get to a place where everything has been stripped away, we've talked about the situation to the end, and we've worked through all the details, and we've gone through all the jokes about it, and we've gone through all the anger about it, and we've gone through all that, and we get very, very quiet. One thing that I have heard that just breaks my heart every time I hear it is, why won't anyone protect me? Why do I have to go through this life without having someone cover me? I can take care of myself, but why do I always have to? Why am I the one who has to protect me? So I know I've said this before, and now I'm saying this out loud. It's just been a minute since I've talked about it. But when people say something like, you just have to be there for yourself and protect yourself and care for yourself, a woman who has an unresolved father wound, who has had to be her own protector, that does not sound empowering to her. If anything, it sounds more damning and hurtful, because it's like, I've already done that. I already know how to do that. And it makes you feel even more abandoned that there hasn't been anyone around you who has thought to step in and cover you. So connecting this to rushing into relationships for those of us with unresolved father wounds, and I think this can happen whether or not you're in a heterosexual or homosexual or, you know, pansexual relationship, whatever the genders or the identifying parties are within, I think you can still do the same action. That what you're looking for is, I can't wait to be in a relationship, or I want to be in a relationship to finally be with my person and be able to feel some sense of safety, some sense of covering, and have someone who really cares about me. I think that's why I've seen many a woman, no matter how established, no matter how successful, no matter how competent she is, when she meets a person who says, just with words, not even necessarily with actions, but if they say with words, I want to be there for you, I got you, I'm never going to let anything happen to you, you're so important, you're so deserving of being loved, you're so deserving of being protected, I would never let anything bad happen to you. These are the words that your soul has been wanting to hear forever. And you're hearing it from someone that you have this unspoken connection with, there's romantic connection, and they have some of the qualities, if not a lot of the qualities, of what you want in a future partner or best friend or whatever. So you're going to let yourself be taken away with it, because this person is offering you some semblance or the promise of protection, and it is all that you've ever wanted to be nestled into. So it's easier to not stick to your original timeline, because I will meet women who will say, whether or not they're my student or not, they'll say, yeah, I'm someone who believes in, you know, taking it slow or getting to know someone, or I've made a lot of mistakes in the past, so the person I'm with is going to have to work for it. And then they meet a person who says the right things or acts in the right way, and it feels like it's like the answer to a prayer. And it feels like this is the moment. And they will let all of their boundaries and walls go. And like I said, they'll give this person a lot more grace and a lot more leeway and a lot more forgiveness that they would never give someone else before, because this person offers a promise of protection, of covering and companionship, which they have not had before. So the three things that I talk about, y'all, are going to be your checklist of things for you to work through. Okay. So this first one, this unresolved father wounds that may show up in really wanting, desiring, and needing to be protected and being covered, and having someone say out loud those words to you. You know, even some of y'all, me saying those words, I'm never going to let anything happen to you. I got you. I'm here for you. You're deserving of being protected. Even me saying that may have struck something in some of y'all. It may have even made some of you cry, because I know when I've talked about this before, people have commented, I'm crying right now on the other side of the screen, right? And I think that's normal, because those are needs, y'all. They're not wants. They're not nice to haves. They are needs that we need. I think not only with people, I think all children need that. And I think it shows up differently, or the way it manifests differently depends on, you know, gender or social norms or what's happening in community. But I just think us as women, us as little girls of parents, that desire to be covered is innate and is natural. And I think it's human. And it's very painful when that doesn't happen, which is when someone triggers it and makes us want to hold on to it, right? So you need to work on that inner child work in that area to start to give to yourself the things that you may have exchanged for someone else to give to you who may not have been a good fit. The second reason that I've noticed that women will rush into relationships, that's also something that I had to learn for myself, is touch starvation. So just to put it bluntly, some of us have sexualized affection. Some of us, the only ways that we can get very reliable physical touch is when we are in romantic relationships with people who can hug us and hold our hands and kind of the most ultimate way to be connected to someone. If part of what, let me actually just even bring it back from affection. If part of the core wound of someone who deals with love addiction is this deep aching need of being, or wound of being abandoned and of being rejected, that kind of joke that when you are in love with someone, healthy love, addictive love, whatever, but just when you're in love with someone, when you meet the people that you just love, you just want to be wrapped up in their skin. Like you want to be able to tuck them under your skin, or you just want to be able to get under their skin. You know, think about if you're a parent or a child of someone, or if you have a pet, you just want to be as closely connected. You just want to soak them in through osmosis. You just want to kind of be one. And so if that is kind of like this core need to just be inseparable from your love, to be inseparable from that type of intense type of love, for many of us, sexual intercourse, being inside another person, being intertwined with that person, is the closest you could ever get to that feeling, that euphoria. And so rushing to that, to be deeply, intimately intertwined, connected, and to feel them, to feel the pressure of that, the weight of that, the sensations of that, the sounds, the warmth of that, right? That is, I don't even want to use the word addicting, because I feel like in that context, it kind of devalues what I'm trying to say about it. But I think, or maybe it actually gives the exact value to it, because it is the most, it is such a special connection, right? And if that is what you're wanting, and that's what you're needing, right? You're needing to feel deeply connected to a person, to a thing, because outside, otherwise in the world, you know, you're living life on your own. You're taking care of your own problems. You're solving your own problems. You may be talking with other people about things that's going on, but for the most part, you know, you may feel disconnected from certain people. And again, going back to just general affection, if you're not getting touched and hugged and held, and people stroking your hair, or you're being able to stroke their hair, being able to interlock arms with people and to just have gentle caresses and things like that, if the only way you get access to that is when you're in romantic partnerships, I think, of course, you're going to rush to that, especially if you're someone who is aware that you want to be touched and that you want to be connected. I know not everybody has that preference. There are some people who are like, I don't want to be touched at all. What I do think is interesting for those of you who are like, I don't ever want to be touched, I wonder what is the ratio for people who say, I don't ever like to be touched, I'm not a hugger or whatever. And I wonder what your relationship with sex is like. I wonder if you feel the same way about intercourse when you're in a relationship with someone that you love, right? I'm not talking about relationships where there's a whole lot of discord and conflict and everything else, but when it's someone that you actually love and care about, is it the same thing? Because I know that in relationships, you can still be someone who doesn't like the physical affection part, but is it because you're getting everything that you need through intercourse? Like, that's kind of like you live in deprivation from it for so long. And then when you're in intercourse, you are truly there. Like you're there, like you're doing all the touches, right? That like there's no limit. There's nothing about that that makes you feel uncomfortable when that is the most intense of touches. So that's just a side note. I've never asked anyone about that specifically, but I'm just throwing that out there. So if anyone ever wants to share that with me, let me know. But yeah, so touch starvation and really needing affection and really needing care can make us accelerate our dating process. So instead of us slowing down how long it takes for us to allow someone to hold our hands or to kiss them or to have sex, or whether or not it's oral, anal, intercourse, I probably just need to go ahead and mark this episode as explicit when I upload it. But I want to say different positions. And I'm not going to, because I want to be inclusive of all sexual practices. But I know I don't know how this works. I don't want to get flagged or something. So, Lord, whatever. What was I saying? If that's your only access to affection, you can rush yourself moving towards those things quicker in a relationship than you would otherwise. And that's why sometimes you can find yourself having sex with people and not feeling like at first you feel very empowered. You feel like, okay, that's what I wanted. That's what I needed. Like, there's no regrets. But then after a while, you're like, that felt really empty, or I wanted more, or I wanted them to say something, or I wanted there to be a different kind of commitment on the other side. Like, I was expecting something. I was expecting some type of emotional exchange, energetic exchange. I was expecting something to be transformational on the other side of this, and it wasn't there. If you ever have those experiences, it may be because you're expecting for sex to give you something with this person or for yourself, something more than what they can give, whether or not that is related to your own sense of internal safety, your own sense of, you know, maybe trying to use sex or sexual connection to repair this relationship, to fast track it, to even maybe even disconnect from this person and show that I really don't care about this. You know, it may not be working out the way that you want it to because you're asking it for it to do something that it's not designed to do. So if that is the case, if you've been using sex to overconnect to people because of a lack of access to touch and affection, we need to want to acknowledge that physical nurturance, care, and connection is a human need as human beings. And I know that can be hard to say, especially in the world that as much as we talk about sex and relationships and everything else, especially post-COVID, we do have a very touch-starved community, especially here in the States. And so I'm not trying to tell folks who may already know that this is a problem, just remind you of it. Because sometimes when people do that, it can make you feel like more helpless on the other side. Like, okay, I know that's a problem, but what am I supposed to do about that? One of the things that I have had to learn how to do is to de-idolize romantic affection as being my only source of affection. So looking for affection in my everyday life. So friends, people around me, allowing myself to gently touch the shoulder of the person in line next to me that I'm having a great conversation with. And like, it's clear that there is consent and there's openness, right? Allow myself when I meet new people or when I see old friends again to have hugs. Telling my current friends, hey, when I hug you, I'm working on this. So I think I want longer hugs. Is it okay if we have longer hugs, like more lingering hugs? You know, I even did it with my body worker the other day who I'm working on a lot of these sensations with. You know, I asked her for a hug. She knows I'm working on this stuff. So she gave me a hug and then I paused. Like when I checked that wasn't what I wanted or that I needed more, I said, actually, can I have another hug? I feel like I ended that too soon. She said, of course. And so I turned and I let myself hug her until I felt like that's what I needed. And I inhaled and I exhaled. And she did it at the same time. And it was so fulfilling. And so this body connection to ourselves and not trying to repress those needs or not trying to intellectualize them or say, okay, I'll get to that later, is so, so important on working on this stuff. The third way or the third reason that I've noticed that sometimes it could be easy for love addicts to not chase in relationships and rush into partnerships and skip a lot of steps when getting to know someone is feeling not grounded in your body. So part of what I was already saying, but also kind of feeling as if you don't quite have enough. This one may actually vary more or how it shows up depending on your life. But I've said before how sometimes we can, if you're just starting your love addiction recovery journey, one of the lessons for you to learn through this process is that your real life does not start when you meet your person. It's not like everything that you're building, all the friendships, the places that you're living, the career that you have, the hobbies that you have, they're not filler activities until you meet the person. And that's when your real life starts, right? Because if that's the kind of mindset that we are using or the heart and intention that we're using, we will have an incredibly full life. We will have tons of friends. We'll be filling up our passport books. We will be, you know, building a career that we like. We'll be stacking paper and feel so incomplete on the other side of it. but it's going to be more than just the human need for companionship and connection. I feel like you can have the whole world and still want to have someone to share it with. I feel like that's a natural human need if you're someone who wants to be in partnership. But I think there's a difference between that and I have the whole world in front of me and I can't even enjoy it because there's nobody here. There's a difference between I have this, it's amazing, I love it so much, and I want to show it to somebody, or I have this and it means nothing to me. I hope that distinction is clear, right? And so to do that is settling into doing gratitude with your life and being very deeply entrenched in, if I didn't meet somebody else, if I knew that I was not going to meet someone, but I knew that that might be part of my path, how could I and how would I find joy in this life in front of me? And I've heard things like that, you know, through a lot of my adult life, and it's hit me very differently at different stages. Some stages, I was like, I'd be great. You know, I got me, I got Jesus, we're good, you know. Other times, I would be like, I think I'd be okay, but not really connected to it. Other times when people would say things like that, it would make me enrage. It would feel so condescending and so insensitive and so wrong and so hurtful and so blamey and so negligent to say that to someone who is feeling so alone and suffering. And the next time I heard it when I needed it, it was right before I had to go through a chapter where it was something that I had to grieve, where what came up for me was not the anger, the sadness that was underneath it. The sadness, the fear of, you know, that greatest fear of being abandoned, rejected, of being alone, coming to the surface and having to confront that, right? What does that mean if I am alone at the end of this? Does that mean that I'm actually not good enough? Does that mean that I'm actually not lovable? Does that validate the secret fears that I've had my whole life? And I had to face that and sit with that and sit with those emotions and come to the other side of it. When you don't do that work, to connect it to the topic of the importance of pacing, is you will rush into relationships with people because you think that life with them is going to give you something bigger and deeper than what you already have with yourself. When you do that, y'all, you're more susceptible to exchanging your life, you know, this big, beautiful life that you say that you love and you say that it's enough, and you'll slowly start to dismantle it, to stop investing in it because you think what they have in their garden is brighter and shinier and grander until you start to slowly, either over time, lose yourself or very quickly lose yourself. And when you do that, you lose your power, you lose your identity. And two things are going to happen, or maybe more than two things, but two things I'm going to give you today. If you are with someone who truly loves you for you and loves you for your identity and your likes and your dislikes and your opinions and your sense of self and your individuality, when you start to exchange all of who you are to become the perfect girlfriend, wife, partner, whoever, they have nothing else to connect to. Y'all were Velcro. You know, you were the sticky side and they were the soft side, and that's what made y'all match. And so once you got rid of your stickiness, there's nothing for that person to stick to anymore. And especially it impacts your match when you start to lose yourself. And then also it becomes a whole lot of labor and become very heavy on that person to now be your everything, because they probably were very attracted to you for being who you are. And they liked the challenge. They liked the insight. They liked the interest that you brought to the partnership and to their life, right? So that's one thing that can happen when you start to exchange everything you are because you think that this life is the golden life and your life is just the backup. The second thing that can happen, or another option that can happen, is this person will drain you. You know, they like the fact that you're starting to give up your likes and your dislikes, and, you know, you're starting to merge and spend all your days and your hours and your weeks with them, and you're becoming one entity. And they will just like drain and drain and drain you. And it doesn't have to be abusive. It doesn't have to be, you know, like narcissistic, but it definitely that they welcome this absence of the loss of you. And that is very dangerous, y'all, because what happens if and when this person changes their mind? What happens when they're going through a bad day? What happens when the honeymoon is over? It gets very easy for this relationship and for you to get discarded, and you really to feel like you don't really have that much to stand on. So you really, really, really need to truly learn how to build and connect to the life that you have with gratitude. But again, like I said, to find that balance. to find that balance between repressing the want and desire for relationship or for partnership, but also not at the for the sake of losing yourself and losing everything that makes you important and makes you you. Okay. So I hope that that was helpful. Both parts, part A of the podcast was, you know, this transitions that I think a lot of people have gone through over the last couple of months. And so I hope that that hit whoever needed it at the right time whenever you're listening to this. And then the second part about the importance of dating and pacing, or pacing while you're dating. So here are the things that I promised that I was going to say about that, about the father wound and about working on pacing with dating. So the father wound intensive, I had planned to do a father wound intensive in October, and it was going to be like 6 weeks for us to dig into it. One of the things that I learned and came to terms with in my sabbatical, part of my whiteboard dry erase moment, is that I need to take a break from intensive work for now. So what that means for me is I'm closing down my one-on-one services. So meaning one-on-one coaching support. At the end of this year, I'm taking an indefinite break from it. I don't know how long it's going to be. I don't know if I just need to do it for, you know, half a year, or again, indefinitely. But I am no longer going to be doing one-on-one work. I've already talked to my private clients about it. I've talked to recovery school students about it because they have access to like discounted one-on-one sessions with me. And I've opened my calendar through the rest of December on the days that I have available, so that if there was anyone who ever wanted to book a one-on-one time with me, that they can go ahead and do that. Because after, actually, December is full. After November, you know, I won't be available. And that includes like professional mentorship and all that stuff as well. But with that, that also includes the fatherhood intensive. And so I was like, I don't really feel like I have the capacity for that right now. So I ended up closing that. And where I really want to put a lot of my focus on is finishing the books, which right when I think I'm done with the book and I come and tell y'all I'm done, I go to go revise it and reread it. And then I'm like, oh, I want to add this section. So it just keeps growing and growing and growing. But I want to be able to finish these books. But considering putting the father wound materials that I was going to teach live in a book, but basically, I'm going to be taking time over the next couple of months to work on that. But the thing that is not changing is the recovery school. The recovery school is still my favorite and best place to work on every single thing that I've talked about today, from the trauma to learning how to date, to the pacing, to the self-compassion, to the inner child work. Your first month in the recovery school is very heavily focused on, let's look at how we talk to ourselves. Let's look at how we get emotionally regulated. Let's look at some of the trauma that brought us here. Because this healing work is not about just learning how to make your dream list of the right person, because you can manifest, well, two things. For those of you who are manifestation girlies, you might be able to try to manifest someone into your life, but if you don't feel like you're worthy and capable of having that person, you're going to sabotage it. The other thing is if you are, you may manifest someone who into your life who has this magic list, but you may also manifest some other red flags and things that you are still susceptible to, but because they have these other qualities, you're going to try to make it work. And, you know, everything that glitters is not gold. And you have to be able to choose yourself on the other side of this. One of the relationships that I was in, I'll go ahead and share this. And if I decide to change my mind, we'll cut this out. But I've already started talking. So let's see if this makes the cut. But one of the relationships that I was really blessed to be in over the last couple of years that I really learned a lot from was with this great guy. And we actually almost got married, y'all. Went as far as looking at rings and all this other stuff, was very financially well off and all this other stuff. And according to other people, that would have been a really good fit. But it would have required for me to lose so many important things about myself and things that I wanted in my identity. And that was not going to work for me. And I think that's a testament to what I was saying about there being different levels to this. I think that Tina before, who had mastered level one or level two, would have been in this type of relationship and been like, sold, give me my ring. Let me go look for my wedding dress because I found the one. Tina now, that's on a very much higher level than that stuff before, saw that and was like, no, I deserve more than that. I am worth more than that. I have enough peace in my heart and in my body and in my spirit that I don't need this, right? What I need is myself. What I need is my sanity. And I know that love starts in me, and I attract love and I magnetize love to me, and I get to have what I want, and I don't have to lose myself on the other side of this. And so I want every person to have that abundance, right? And to not feel like you're missing out on love and on the ability to be loved if you don't take what's right in front of you, because that person was not the last. That is not the last person to be crazy about me and to romance me and to sacrifice for me and to adore me. And the more I love myself, the more access to that type of love that I get. And it really is an incredible exchange. And so I want that to be the type of experience that every single woman gets, to realize that she is the answer and loving herself is the answer. And getting access to support and mentorship and coaching for all the blind spots that you may have, in the same way that I've had my own loved ones and friends and body workers and therapists and coaches who have helped me with my blind spots. We're not meant to do this life alone. And so if you would like support with any of those things, I'm available for you in our Recovery School coaching program. Again, you can go to therecoveryschool.com, learn about the new curriculum there, and join and cancel anytime if it's not the right fit, or stay as long as you would like. I think what I'm going to do is start to do annual get-togethers for our alumni. So people who've been in the program for a year can come to our annual workshops and get-togethers as part of the program and just really build this really beautiful networking community. Actually, this upcoming week, I'm going to be going on a cruise with some recovery school students. We're doing an alumni trip, and we're going to Turks and Caicos, the Bahamas, and the Dominican Republic. And so this is going to be our second reunion. And I really want to be able to expand it to people who might not be able to do a multi-day getaway vacation, but still to bring all these women in the same room who have learned so much and who have invested in themselves time and energy, of course, you know, finances wise, but just really spirit wise, to become the women that they are and for us to all connect as sisters. So would love for you to be a part of that family. Again, you can go to therecoveryschool.com. And yep, that's it for now. So thanks so much. I am so happy to be back, and I look forward to our next episode. Sending you all love.
Thanks for listening to this week's podcast. Before we get started, let's take a small break to say thank you to this week's sponsors.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.